Hello, good morning, and welcome to the latest edition of the Tribune podcast on the road in the Bundesliga. We're in Hamburg, and yeah, before you say it, I know that for the first time since 1963, there is no Bundesliga team in Hamburg. But that does mean there is a derby. There is a Hamburg derby between Hamburg and St. Pauli for the first time since 2011. It's a beautiful day here in Hamburg. It's about midday. There are lots of Hamburg fans gathered behind the Nordkurve, Nordtribüne, Nordkurve. What do you say in Hamburg?
Nordtribüne.
Nordtribüne in Hamburg. All the fans are gathering. There's a good atmosphere before the derby. I've got some Hamburg fans here who are happy to speak to us. We've got Timothy. Timothy, so the first question is mainly football related. How are you getting used to life in Division 2? Have you recovered from relegation?
Well, to be honest, it's been pretty hard years, the last 2, 3, 4 years, because we already struggled for all the years not to go into the second division. But to be honest,
Are you used to it?
We're getting used to it the last weeks, yeah.
Because it's not been so easy, has it? It's been quite a difficult start, Hamburg.
No, it hasn't. We've changed a lot in the team. We've got so many young players right now. We just kept our captain and two others who are leading the team right now. And we've got the new coach at the end of the season for the last 7-8 weeks, and he already installed his system in those weeks.
Do you think Christian Titz came in too late?
I do, yeah. But well, you know, people do decisions, and you don't have to look back. You've got to look forward. And he's a very good coach, I think. So we're looking forward to the whole season. And it's been quite hard for the first games.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, the result that stands out is, of course, the 5-0. I'm sorry to mention it.
Yeah, well,
did you expect that? Did you expect it to be so difficult in Division 2?
To be honest, I did, yeah. Because you go down after so many years in the first division. You are obviously, or all the people say, you're the best team in the division. You have to win all the games, but it's not that easy, because the second division in Germany is pretty good, I'd say. And Cologne also came down, so there are many enemies that are pretty strong. And we've got to find our system, we've got to find our team, and yeah, that's the problems we've got to face. So,
are there particular advantages to the second division in comparison to Bundesliga 1? Are there certain things you're looking forward to down here?
Yeah, we're playing against St. Pauli again.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And that's important for you as a Hamburg fan?
Yeah, I've been very looking forward the whole summer to play against them, because you'd said it. We played against them the last time in 2011.
And that didn't go too well, did it?
No, obviously it didn't. But we forget about that, and we are just looking forward to win against them. So,
what's the main difference between HSV and St. Pauli? Why don't you like each other?
Well, I don't know. It's like, you know, it's all the like all the differences in derby plays. You've got those teams who are in the same city, who are just having other views of life, other views of football, and it's always those comparisons between teams in the city. Like all those teams in London, they all have their derby enemy. Yeah. It's the same in Germany, it's the same in Hamburg, and we're just happy to have them against us again. And I'd say, you know, there are fan friendships between the Glasgow teams and the Hamburg teams.
I think to explain that a little bit, there are some connections going back quite a few years, I think, between St. Pauli and Celtic on the one hand,
exactly,
and Hamburg and Rangers on the other hand. Can you explain a bit where does that come from?
Well, there's a lot behind it. I think there's a lot of religion stuff behind it, because Glasgow is Catholic.
Catholic,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, does that play a role in Hamburg?
It doesn't. Religion doesn't play a role, but I'd say it's just grew in the years because of the comparison in the Glasgow teams and the Hamburg teams, because there's some kind of enemieship, and they just got together, you know. So, and I'd say there's a friendship because we had one of our best players in the 90s, Jörg Alberts, going to Glasgow Rangers. Yeah. So maybe that's why we've got some kind of friendship to them. Yeah.
It's funny, I was walking around the S-Bahn station before, and there was actually a man, I think he was German, he didn't sound Scottish, but he was walking around in a Rangers top and a Scottish kilt. So I was going to speak to him, but I think he'd had a few cans too many, so I thought maybe best not to speak to him.
There's some of them around here. So.
Like you said, there are some big differences between Hamburg and St. Pauli. One of them is, like you said, the different view of football. And I think we can explain that a bit. Obviously, St. Pauli are quite proud of the fact that they're 100% owned by the club, by the members, by the AFAL, the registered club.
Yeah.
Whereas Hamburg, for the past few years, have been quite reliant on the investor, Klaus-Michel Kühne. Is he a popular figure among AFAL fans? Or what do you think of him?
He's not really popular because he bought some parts of the club. And he thought it might be like in other countries where you buy the club or some parts of the club, and you've got all the decisions in your own hand.
Yeah.
But it's not like that right here. He owns only about a quarter, not even a quarter.
20.57%.
Exactly, about a fifth of the club, and he's the one who only speaks to the press. But, you know, you've got to see, he's a man, he's about 81, 82 years old, and he's just a fan. He's not a professional football manager or something like that. It's just that it's his money. His money he's worrying about, and that keeps him, exactly. But it's not the right decision to follow him, following managing decisions or buying players or so.
But like you said, without his money, he is a very rich businessman. I think he's from the Hamburg region, isn't he? Is he from this city?
Yeah, his company is based in Hamburg, but he's living in the Switzerland. He's a very complicated person.
Would Hamburg have difficulties without his money?
To be honest, he came into the club, he bought some parts of the club and gave us money just for credit. To be honest, I think we would have been gone to the second division much earlier without him. That's, to be honest, the only thing we've got to thank him for. But well, you see, in the end, we've landed here. So yeah, whatever.
Hasn't he also said that he wants to sell his shares now?
He said he wants
to leave the club, doesn't he?
He said that, but I don't know. I listen to him and I don't take him for granted, because he always says very much but doesn't do anything. Yeah. And if he does, if he sells his parts of the club, well, then he does. Yeah. Anyone other can come and buy it, well, it's not that important.
Would you prefer the fans to have more of influence at AFAL, like similar to St. Pauli? Is that a model which you would find better?
It's difficult to say. Difficult to say. In the end, nobody who buys that part of the club has to decisions in his own hands. Yeah. You know, it's just the money what's going into the club. But they cannot take any decision of how we are running the club or so. Okay. That's not important.
Going back to today and the derby and St. Pauli today for the first time in 7 years. What's the rivalry like in the city? Are there certain areas of Hamburg which are more red and brown, and other areas which are more blue and white? How is it split?
Well, it's obviously more red and brown around the Millerntor Stadion in St. Pauli, or the part of Hamburg which is called Sternschanze. There are like many, many St. Pauli fans, because it's all a bit politically more on the left side, you know. Well, that doesn't mean that AFAL fans are on the right side, but the Pauli fans say it is. So, a lot around those parts of the city are St. Pauli fans, but all in all, I'd say it's a bit more HSV, but we are, well, there are always some idiots who just coming to football to smash their heads. Well, yeah, then they should go ahead, but I'm here for drinking beer and seeing HSV winning.
Yeah. And do you have friends or family members who are St. Pauli fans? Or do you have any contact with St. Pauli fans?
I have contact with St. Pauli fans. You cannot stop that when you're living in Hamburg, but around my friends and my family, there's no St. Pauli fan. Yeah. No.
Okay, so going on to today's game. Obviously, it's been a difficult couple of weeks for Hamburg, and St. Pauli have won their last two games. Do you think that will give St. Pauli more confidence to get a win here today, or do you think Hamburg is still the stronger team?
I'd say St. Pauli is always very confident to win against Hamburg, because they are always saying we are the big HSV. They want to beat us, and for us it's just, you know, the last weeks have been a pretty much up and down when you're looking at the results. But I'd say even the 0-5 against Jan Regensburg, we've played pretty well. It's just they had 5-6 chances.
And they all went in.
And they all went in. You know, that's, bad luck. I mean, if we've shot 2 or 3 goals in the first half, it would have pretty different. So, we've got to see. We just have to play our football, what we are looking for, and then it's going to be pretty good, I think.
Okay, so what's your prediction for today?
I'd say 3-0.
3-0 to Hamburg.
3-0,
okay,
yeah.
Great. Let's go over and speak to your mates, because they've all run off, because I think they're scared. I think they're scared of talking English. Lads, if I say one word to you, St. Pauli, what do you think?
Fuck you. Shit. Yeah, the same.
What's the problem?
The problem is St. Pauli.
why don't you like them? What's the difference between HSV and St. Pauli?
Come on.
You explain it. You're from here. I'm not from here.
I'm born in Hamburg, and in Hamburg there's only one team, which is the builder, one of the building teams in the German Bundesliga, and St. Pauli is, I can't explain it. It's kind of fucking nasty bullshit or something like that.
How did you become a Hamburg fan then? Is it because of your family?
No, because I'm Hamburg.
So for you,
I'm born here, and I think that when you are born here in Hamburg, then you can't become a St. Pauli fan, because St. Pauli is a kind of, actually I don't know, it's something that doesn't mean to me nothing. No, it
doesn't mean anything to you.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Lars, would you agree with that? Is there a big difference, a big split between Hamburg fans and St. Pauli fans in the city?
Yeah, for sure. Because the Hamburg fans are, I think, definitely better, for sure.
That's why?
Because, so we are... we played the last 55 years in the first Bundesliga in Germany. And St. Pauli is a club like, you know... In London, you have Queen's Park Rangers and Chelsea. Yeah. It's the same procedure.
So St. Pauli are the smaller club.
Yeah, so definitely. And the most St. Pauli fans are smoke joints, drink a lot of beer.
What's wrong with that? Is that not a good thing?
Not for football. I think in football is not good if you make some things like the Pauli fans. But it's okay. In Hamburg, we have two clubs. That's good for the city. Yeah. That's good for us. But we have a derby, but it's only all the 7 years or 8 years. Then we have the chance to play against them. And today is a chance to make it better. When is the last 2011?
I think.
The last time was in 2011. Were you there? Do you remember it?
Yeah sure. It was a bad day for us.
It's the same as in Glasgow.
Starting at Glasgow Rangers. It's the same procedure. Yeah.
Well, they're quite similarly sized clubs, whereas St. Pauli are a lot smaller.
We are not,
Hamburg.
Because there's Hamburg and there's nothing.
I was asking Timothy before, are there certain things about St. Pauli which maybe you would like to see at Hamburg? For example, they're not reliant on an owner or on an investor like Klaus-Michael Kühne. Would you prefer that with HSV? A
I think what might be a good thing for the St. Pauli fans to realize is that you get really low-cost tickets for the games you want to watch, because if you want to go to a match here, they are quite expensive compared to St. Pauli, because when St. Pauli was in the second league all the time, the prices were quite low, so you were able for 10 euro or 12 euro to watch a game. And if you go, for example, here to the in the first league to the Bayern München game, then you pay 120 euro for a card which is right above the ceiling or under the ceiling. So
I think even today the most expensive tickets or the most expensive seats for today are, I think, 83 or 85
euros. Yeah. So we are in the supporters club as well. So I'm in the supporters club, and there you always have the chance to get some tickets in advance. But the ticket system is so bad that we were not able to get into it. And I got the first access around the afternoon. And if you get tickets in the standing area, then you would have paid 19 euro. But now when you are in the seating area, we pay 73. So
that's a lot compared to the last game against Regensburg, for example.
Yep.
Have you ever been to a match at the Millantor?
Yeah, I've been. Actually, I was a St. Pauli fan when I was little.
Okay. So why did you change?
I was not so into St. Pauli. There was one of the players from St. Pauli which I really liked, and then I said, yeah, okay, then I enjoy watching games from them.
Okay.
And then he changed the club from St. Pauli to Nürnberg, and then I said, okay, then...
Which player was that?
It was Martin Driller.
Okay.
Yep. And then I said, yeah, okay. And then there was another guy from HSV I liked a lot, which was Serge Barbares, and then I changed the team.
Okay.
And from then on, I'm a St. Pauli fan.
A Hamburg fan.
Hamburg fan, yeah.
So you've got no split loyalties today, 100% for Hamburg.
For me today, it's... I come here in a HSV dress, but for me, it's today like the best team can win. So whatever team plays best is supposed to win.
Yeah. So what do you think the score will be? What's your prediction?
I would say... I would love to see HSV win, of course.
Yeah.
I would say it's a 3-1 for Hamburg.
3-1 to Hamburg.
Yeah.
Okay, lads, just to finish off, what I need to get your score predictions. What do you think the score will be today?
3-0.
3-0 to St. Pauli?
Yeah, no.
to Hamburg.
Not at all.
To Hamburg.
Gotcha. Yeah. 3-0 is a correct...
3-0?
Yeah.
2-0.
2-0. And you said 3...
I already said 3-0.
3-0. Yeah. Okay, well, I personally have no idea, because it's a derby. So it could be anything, couldn't it? St. Pauli won the last one 1-0.
Well, last question, what's your favourite?
Between Hamburg and St. Pauli?
Yeah.
I'm completely neutral.
Sure you are.
I have no opinion.
Sure you are.
I have no
course.
Opinion. I've been here once before, when Cologne played here. I've not been to St. Pauli yet. It's one of my grounds where I have to tick it off. I will go there at some point, maybe for the return game, for the next derby. Is it February or March, I think, at St. Pauli?
Yeah, March.
So I might go there. So I need to go, and hopefully we'll do another podcast then, and we'll get some St. Pauli fans to say what they think about you.
Go ahead then.
Okay. Anyway, thank you for your time, lads.
Thank you.
Right, to find out how the Hamburg game and the atmosphere ends, you've got to listen to the end of the podcast. Bit of a teaser there for you. But Matt Ford is in the studio with me, as is Felix Tamzer. We're going to talk about the Hamburg game a little bit later, but also probably the best match day in Germany in the Bundesliga in 5 years. I can't even remember the last time there was so much excitement. We had Borussia Dortmund with an amazing comeback win. We had Bayern losing, which was just, you know, fantastic in so many ways. Sorry, Bayern fans. Stuttgart finally got their first win. So did Schalke. Hannover still not without a win. Unbelievable. So many things going on. So many places to start. But I think we probably should start with Bayern. 2-0 loss to Hertha in the capital on Friday night. Where do we go from here? What went wrong?
Yeah, obviously came on the back of a 1-1 draw at home to Augsburg as well, didn't it? And suddenly we've gone from a situation where in the first 4 or 5 match days, Bayern looked absolutely unstoppable. I think I wrote a piece at one point bemoaning the fact that this is going to be another walk to the title, and it still might be.
It still might be, yeah.
It's certainly, from a purely neutral perspective, certainly gives us all a little bit more confidence and a bit more excitement that we might have a title race on our hands this time. As for Bayern themselves, they seem to have slowed down, and I think, like you said, it has been a good match day. I think we'll talk about the other teams later. How I think everyone's stepped up a gear in terms of goals, in terms of shots on goal, in terms of the pace of the passing, in terms of counter attacks. Bayern have stepped back in pretty much all those areas.
And that was the thing against Augsburg. They drew that game because they failed to take those chances. You know, Sandro Wagner had chances and Gnabry had chances, but they could have won it. It was one of those games where they just got a bit unlucky. But this game against Hertha, they were absolutely outplayed, weren't they, Felix?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we also need to discuss Niko Kovac's part in that. I mean, all those weird experiments with Goretzka's left back, what on earth was that? It just looked slow. It looked like something didn't work for them. And I think Kovac, at least in part, has a responsibility, and it's going to be interesting to see where they go from here. I mean, there's already reports that there are problems in the dressing room, Hummels not being happy, Kovac sees him as the weakest link out of all players. It's going to be interesting where Kovac and the rest of the Bayern squad take it from here, basically.
I think the whole thing can be over-exaggerated. I think the report you're referring to there from Sportbild this morning, to be honest, I think they've been waiting for absolutely any excuse
to jump in,
to start sticking the knives into Kovac for any reason whatsoever. This isn't a massive crisis to Bayern Munich. They have a winnable fixture in midweek against Ajax, which I would still expect them to win at home. It's not a crisis. It's an interesting point for Kovac. How does he deal with the first little questions? And that's not to suggest that, oh, this is it, he can't handle it, or he can't handle the personalities and the stars in that squad. Doesn't mean that at all. The comments regarding Hummels, I don't know, but I think more telling is perhaps the quote that came out from Jerome Boateng after the game in Berlin. And he did have a shocker. He admitted it. But he said, I'm a person. I'm not a machine. Everyone has a bad game from time to time. And that's probably a much more sensible way to approach this this massive Bayern crisis at the moment.
And definitely, is that sort of the key point for me? Do we need to look at this Bayern team, or does there need to be a change of the evaluation of this Bayern team? As you know, they're always talked about as being a machine in the way that they perform. And yeah, as you say, Boateng admits afterwards he had a very bad performance, and he is a human, he's capable of that. Is that something that Kovac needs to do a better job of handling and controlling? Because Bayern have been guilty of being seen as this machine that just keeps producing and new players will come in.
It's his main responsibility, and it has been since the start of the season. He came into this job knowing that he had to take over this transition at Bayern. We saw on Friday night whether it was Gnabry, whether it was Renato Sanchez. That's been quite impressive since he came back. Mm-hmm. But these are still younger players who Kovac is bringing in as part of that job of developing Bayern's transition and moving away from the old guard. And there will be slip ups from time to time. It doesn't make it a crisis. It just makes it a little interesting juncture in Kovac's development.
It's also worth pointing out, like, we've all seen all these memes doing the rounds with like Kovac is gonna get the sack on the base of two games or whatever that was, the return of the Yup, all sorts of stuff like that. I think
I've not seen that one. The return of the Yup.
It was pretty funny, but we all know that's currently doesn't have any hold in reality. I think one thing in favor of Kovac, for instance, in comparison to Ancelotti last season, is that he knows the system. He knows who he's working with, the system he's working with, the club he's working with. And I think he has more of a chance of coming good out of this mini crisis. Not yet.
We touched on it before, though, and that what Bayern's system actually is and what they seem to lack mainly, and it wasn't just the taking the chances. And there have been some interesting statistics in Kicker this week. They pointed out that Bayern had 22 major chances against Augsburg and Hertha over the past week, and they've only taken 22.6% of them. That puts them in the bottom half of the Bundesliga in terms of taking chances. Mm. The other problem which stems from that is the complete lack of movement up front. I think it was quite telling that against Hertha, Bayern only had 6 players who ever managed a sprint above 30 kilometres an hour. Mm. Normally, they average 9 players doing that. So there's a complete lack of movement, and that in turn led to a disproportionate number of crosses being thrown in by Bayern. And we noticed that quite a lot. They were completely static up front, and whether it was Alaba on the right, at left back, or Kimmich on the right, throwing in crosses towards a quite static Lewandowski in the middle, and even they weren't coming on. I think only 3 or 4 actually found their target. That was the most concerning for Bayern. They have so much pace, and pace is what does the damage for them at times. When Robin and Ribéry get into their flow, but they never got into that flow on Friday night.
In addition to that, I mean, you can also, I mean, we've come to know Kovac's team, Kovac's Frankfurt from last season, from playing physical, playing hard, playing, giving it all every single game, making the sprints, playing quickly. That isn't happening, and it could be as a result of two things. It could be that Kovacic is maybe trying things, maybe the fact that he has the best squad in the league by far. Maybe he's trying to alter things and to try different systems. That's fair enough, to basically getting used to the fact that he has players that are better than the opposition at any given time, or that something here doesn't work. But that time will tell which one of these options are true.
I think those stats are very interesting. You know, you talk about Bayern and that performance. That's what got me about the Augsburg game. You know, it was just one of those games where you walk away and you say, oh, well, okay, maybe if Sandro Wagner doesn't play, then you win that game because Lewandowski takes one of those chances. But that was the thing about the Hertha game. If they were going to cross the ball because they were so static in the middle, that felt like the worst solution, given that Stark and Rekic are formidable at just heading the ball away. And Hertha dealt with the thing with Bayern very, very well.
And the one time the cross did find its target, Ian Robin put it over the ball from 3 yards out.
That was the one chance I think that the game changed on or turned on, because I think if Robin scores that, you know, you're looking at a different situation. But credit to Hertha. You know, let's flip the coin and look at it from the other perspective. Pau Dardai, quite amusingly, after the defeat to Werder Bremen the week before this, said, oh, I pass on the baton now to Florian Kohfeldt as being the ones that are hunting Bayern, you know, and here we are, Hertha beating Bayern. And Pau Dardai's got a great sense of humour. I think he's a really strong addition for the league in terms of his coach style. But solid first half, take the opportunities when they come and then ride your luck and strong defensive play in the second seemed to work.
From Hertha, it was very much two completely different performances. Like in the first half, they were absolutely convincing going forward, and the most praise there has to go to Andre Duda, doesn't it?
And Dilrussen as well. Yeah, really good.
Fantastic engine room there with Hertha. They ran more in that game than they have done since, I think, it was match day 27 last season. So the work rate is there. Duda's deliveries.
Top scorer?
Top, not just top scorer, but also in two fantastic free kicks already this season. His crossing is second to none and contrasted brilliantly with the poor Bayern crosses. And Kovacic, by all accounts, I think Dardai told his team during the week, said, if you don't believe that we can go into that game and beat Bayern, don't come to training.
And don't we need more of that in the league? Isn't that what we've said for so long? And I'm sure so many people have said, you know, more teams need to take that game on bravely.
Yeah, and it showed. If you go at Bayern, and not just with the footballing guile they had in the first half, and that would then combine with that with the defensive masterpiece they put in the second half. It all came together, and like you said, I'm chuffed for Pau Dardai. He's been slowly building an identity there in Berlin at a club where it's very, very difficult to build an identity.
Absolutely.
He doesn't have one.
So
absolutely top marks to Dardai and his team there.
Would you say that, you said mini crisis earlier, Felix, do you think that, you know, this is just the Bundesliga getting really excited because of all the results on the weekend and Bayern losing, or are we actually seeing the start of what will be a critical period for Niko Kovac?
Well, here's hoping it's a bit of both, to be honest, for the sake of the league. I mean, things need to go either way for this league to get exciting. And I do think that, as you guys said earlier, more teams need to have a go at Bayern. But that goes together with Bayern not playing well. Because if Bayern does play well, you can have a go at them as much as you like. You're going to get 5 or 6 pretty easily. So it's a matter of balance between the two. I think I'm speaking for everyone when I say that we all hope that it will get a bit more exciting than it was so far.
We don't have anything against Bayern.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
6 years of watching them be the best team in Germany takes its toll, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But
I've been encouraged by teams in possession though all weekend, and that's been the main difference for me. We talk so often about how perhaps the same tactics being used throughout the league holds teams back. No Bundesliga team ever seems to want the ball. They rely so much on waiting for their opponent to take and then transitioning and counter-attacking. They're quite happy to sit there with 20% possession and try to hit teams on the break. But when everyone plays like that, it becomes an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, because you just cancel each other out.
But this time we saw so many good examples, not just Hertha. Some of Borussia Dortmund's passing in the second half, which we'll come on to in a bit, was outstanding. Bremen were outstanding in that regard as well. We were looking at Alfred Finnbogason's goal, one of his three for Augsburg, and the passing in the build-up that was outstanding. So hopefully this is going to send a little, maybe I'm getting carried away, but maybe this is, will send a message to the rest of the league that, yeah, we can put our foot on the ball and do something in possession.
I think there's also a degree, you know, look at Augsburg, the way they played against Bayern, they didn't give up in the last 20 minutes. They genuinely thought they could get something from that game. And that's what I felt was such a shame about Schalke when we watched them, Matt, when we watched them lose to Bayern, because the last 20 minutes, they kind of just gave up. You know, and if it's funny that it takes these, you know, so-called smaller teams like Hertha and Augsburg to say, oh no, we're gonna give Bayern a good go. You know, maybe that's where it changes. And I think this season we might see more teams playing 4-3-3. You know, this whole 4-2-3-1, one big man up front and then three behind them. I think teams are trying to get wider more often and bring those wide men into play. And look at the way Hertha have played. If Kalou and Dilrosun and Duda are behind Ibisevic or even with him in an attacking line, that makes such a difference. And another team that, you know, has seems to have done that so well is Borussia Dortmund. You just touched on it there. I was at the game, fortunately, because it was a stonker.
It looks absolutely outstanding, John.
Fantastic.
I was a little bit jealous that I was sat in the office watching that.
Such a brilliant game. Leverkusen with the perfect first half and then the worst second half. And I think that's a lot of that goes on Heiko Herrlich, absolutely. Not spotting things in the game that he has to spot. But I think there's only one place to start in this game, and it's the substitutes of Borussia Dortmund, who absolutely changed the game. And in that regard, in the same way that Herrlich got it wrong for Leverkusen, Favre got it right.
Yeah, the main man, Jadon Sancho, again.
Loved
the bench
it.
Again.
What a performance.
Is he now the top assist provider in any of Europe's top five leagues? And he's only played 130 minutes
of
league football, and he's not started a single game. His impact off the bench is outstanding. Of course, it begs the question, well, why isn't he starting? Those questions were asked, weren't they? And there's a couple of quotes from Sebastian Kehl, the, well, Dortmund legend, and now what's his exact role?
Yeah, he's in charge
head of the professional division or something.
Something long-winded in German.
And
yeah.
he insisted that they value Sancho's explosiveness off the bench more than anything, whether that's because he can have a greater effect against tiring defences, I don't know. I think that's a valid point. I don't want to be too negative about Jadon Sancho. I'm so impressed with him this season, but maybe it is worth pointing out that the one game he has started this year
was the Bruges game. But then everybody was bad in that game.
Yeah, they were all very poor. but he was part of a totally toothless Dortmund attack. So that was the one game he did start. But you know, let's not take too much away from the lad. He came on, I think, within 55 seconds or 56 seconds. Mm-hmm. He'd combined with Royce. If anyone's not seen that goal,
combination goal is up there for goal of the weekend, especially as it is Augsburg's goal for Finn Bogason, second with the flick. And he talked about the transition play. Some of the transition play Dortmund gave in the second half, displayed in the second half, was just superb. I mean, Sancho obviously has that impact off the bench. You know, there was a lot of conversation about who was going to be more effective, Brun Larsen or Sancho, and who to start with. But there's also a strong argument that Paco Alcacer is bringing something completely different to this Dortmund team and that they've needed for a long time.
Absolutely. That thing called it's called the striker.
yeah, fancy that.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah, just as basic as that. And I mean, those substitutions were super. Dortmund looked completely different. And I think you're talking about why isn't Favre starting Sancho and Alcacer, but the bottom line is that, I mean, this team showed so much character with coming back from the situation they were in. They weren't playing well. They were looking poor.
They've come from behind a few times, haven't they, this season? Half an hour.
Absolutely, absolutely. The character in this team is super. I mean, looking back a couple of games back as well, not just this one. It's just looking good so far, both on the pitch and off it. I mean, this Dortmund, I've seen many, many people talking about Dortmund's defense not being stable enough, not being good enough. The one thing that we need to bear in mind is that this team, this is not Peter Bosz's team. Peter Bosz's team was brilliant at times.
Going forward.
Exactly. But when it comes to their defensive, it was completely reckless. It was all over the place. It just wasn't good enough. When it comes to Favre, there are personal mistakes, but that's what they are, personal. And when it comes to the system, you can see a team shaping up. Mm. And when it will shape up, I personally, for one, can't wait.
I was impressed. I know Leverkusen went into a 2-0 lead and they were unfortunate not to go 3-0 ahead, weren't they?
That was a turning point.
Folland hit the post.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And not just that being the turning point, also a moment later, Zagadou sliding in to clear the ball away. I think it was Havertz it was going to fall to.
Yeah.
So I thought that was impressive to be so alert to that. But generally across that back four, obviously there was Zagadou, Akanji and Diallo, all relatively young, relatively inexperienced in that back four. But it's slowly coming together. And Favre knows full well that is still Dortmund's weak point.
Yeah. I thought it was also interesting that he played Diallo at left back. You know, playing Zagadou at centre back was a bold choice. Dropping Schmelzer obviously needs a break, and then dropping Piszczek. And there's a lot of conversation in Dortmund circles. I talked to Stefan Busko, who writes for ESPN, and I met him at the game. And we talk about the upside of having wing backs like Hakimi, less so Diallo, but more Hakimi, who made such a difference with his crosses for Alcacer. The upside is that you have that attacking threat. The downside is that defensively, his positioning isn't very good. I mean, I had the same conversation with him about Sancho and Brun Larsen. Obviously, Brun Larsen scores in this game, gets the first goal to get Dortmund back in it. But he's supposed to be in the team because he offers more defensive discipline, which is this very German trait in wingers. And yet, that's why Sancho doesn't start. Because in a Favre system, you need a winger that can offer that defensive side of things. Yet, in that first half, there was none of that from Brun Larsen, because Mitchell Weiser's goal comes from that side of the pitch, and you know you don't see that much cover from him. So that's where my case is sort of pro Sancho, because why wouldn't you start him and get him to be explosive? Okay, maybe he's better against tired defences, but most players aren't better against tired defences, and there's a case to be made that in a lot of games, especially as you said earlier, Matt, about this 4-2-3-1, if everybody's playing the same style, everybody's got the same kind of players, you need someone like Sancho to change things up. And he certainly did that. He said afterwards, I don't want to be a sub. You know, he doesn't want to come out and speak against the manager, but the manager also knows he can't keep a player like that on the bench all the time.
Dortmund, they aim to compete on all fronts. There'll be more than enough opportunities for Sancho throughout the season. Rumours are going around today already that he could be offered a contract extension as well. I think they're in a good place, Borussia Dortmund. We said at the start of the season that I always thought Favre was the absolutely ideal man, at least in the short to medium term, for the next 2 years.
Well, he's made every team better that he's coached,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And the only drawback that was going to be, you know, Dortmund fans, as we know, they demand attacking football because of that, the Jurgen Klopp hangover. And the question was, you know, is Lucien Favre the man to deliver that? And the fear was, no, he's probably not, but he will stabilise Dortmund. Yeah. But can he actually deliver what Dortmund fans want to see long term? Then again, we've already seen in the 7 goals against Nürnberg and the 4 against Leverkusen that, actually Lucien Favre can also send a cohesive offensive unit out onto the field as well. So that's positive for Dortmund. But maybe as good as they were in the second half, Leverkusen once again completely top heavy.
And that's what frustrates me from Herli's perspective, right? You've got Brandt and Folland out wide, who are doing a great job of shutting down Pulisic and Royce, because Philip was pretty ineffective up top. You've got Tar winning all the aerial battles. If you drag your wingers out wide like Brandt and Folland and ask them to play defensively, and they do, then you give players like Wendell cover. Now, Wendell exposed is a big problem, as we saw in the second half when Brandt was so tired that he couldn't cover for him, and then Pulisic just ran riot against him.
But Herrlich has to see that. Julian Brandt was everywhere. No wonder he was knackered in the second half.
He was, and he deserves credit for that. But then that's on Herrlich to say, okay, Julian's come to me and said he wants to keep playing because it's a big game, but I can see that he's knackered, and we need a defensive winger to cover so that we can see this win out. If you don't make those changes until too late and you don't react, then your players aren't going to be in the positions that they were in the first half because they're going to be too tired. And then you leave your team exposed to one of the most explosive turnaround teams in the league. And I just thought that was really bad coaching.
Yeah, and it's not a new phenomenon with Leverkusen. We saw it last season. As good as they were going forward, they also shipped a lot of goals at the back. I was in Dusseldorf on Wednesday night when they came away with the...
Fortuitous.
It was a fairly lucky Fortuna. Is that a joke, John?
It was. I was a bit disappointed at the lack of laughter, but got there in the end.
Yeah, they came away with a 2-0 win in the end, but they were they had Lukas Radetzky in goal to thank for not being about two or three goals down at half time. There are big issues there, and so far Heiko Herrlich has shown absolutely no evidence to suggest that he's the man to sort out Leverkusen defensively.
He's been fortunate to be carried by Kai Havertz and Julian Brandt, and in this game it was obviously too much to expect them to do that. I mean, they did in the first half, and Leverkusen took their chances when they came, but both goals were sort of fortunate in a way. I mean, Mitchell Weiser gets the ball, he hits it. That's one every 15 games that you get a goal like that. And then the corner, that's pad defending and you just take advantage. But other than the shot that hits the post and the occasional roam forward by Brandt, there wasn't much to see from Dortmund, from Leverkusen in an attacking sense. Now, granted, we've just talked about Brandt and Havertz having to do a lot of running defensively. But is Helly's problem that he relies too much on Havertz and Brandt and he hasn't really got a system?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I think, as you said, Havertz and Brandt did really, really well in the last couple of games. And I think, in a way, Herrlich sort of counted on them to provide. And there comes a time when you cannot just rely on two players to do everything for a team, both offensively and, of course, not defensively. And I think, in a way, this is going to be... I mean, we all thought that Leverkusen are out of that bad time of theirs from the beginning of the season. They couldn't get a win. They had two wins in a row. And then we all thought, here, things are happening. Things are going on a good way. It's going to be interesting to see where they go from here, because the next two, three games are going to be crucial for the remainder of this part of the season for them. And as you said, Havertz and Brandt are two players that they're obviously at the moment they're Leverkusen's best players, but Helles is going to have to come up with solutions for the rest of the season.
And it's funny because we haven't even talked about Leon Bailey, who was on the bench. Right?
Yeah,
and
true.
And what a change that is from last season.
Yeah, key as well. You talk about cover for Wendell at left back. That's one thing that stood out for me in Dusseldorf on Wednesday. I thought the two of them combined brilliantly down at left hand side, both defensively and offensively. I'm a fan of Bailey, not just in terms of his product up front. We all know what he's capable of there. But I think his work ethic is also underestimated, and perhaps Leverkusen missed that.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen games, you and I, where we've said, "Wow, I'm impressed at how much tracking back Bailey does." Yeah. And it seems strange to me that he wouldn't have said, "Okay, Folland's knackered, or you know, Brandt's tired. Maybe we bring on Bailey and just say to him, look, only use your attacking skill on the break. I want you to run really, really hard defensively." You know,
Herrlich only had to look about 10 yards to his right to see the effect that Favre's substitutions were having on the game.
It just took so long to react to it.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, as Felix was saying, these are questions for Herrlich, and he needs to start answering them because, well, the vultures are already circling.
Yeah,
there's already
Ralph
been
rumors
connecting him with Leverkusen and with Ralph Hasenhüttl.
Makes sense.
For me, from a purely tactical point of view, I think that would make sense. I think we said at the time when Hasenhüttl left or wasn't offered a contract extension at Red Bull, that I actually thought he was taking that team in a sensible direction, moving them away from
this dependent transition,
completely reckless Ralph Rangnick attack stuff, and making them a little bit more possession based and almost mimicking Bayern a little bit. And that obviously didn't work with Ralph Rangnick, but that's a separate issue. If he was to bring in similar ideas to Leverkusen, would potentially tick a few boxes.
They need to be a team, and he's got the ability to do that. Look what he did with Ingolstadt. You know, he's made teams strong collectively. Right now, we've just talked about Leverkusen being strong individually, and that's their problem. Right, the rest of the league. There's so many places to start. I mean, Ron Robert Zieler, probably, you know, have a moment's silence for him because that was absolutely awful. Just feel terrible for him. But interesting game.
What was he doing? Was it his socks or
his
shoelaces?
He was pulling up his socks. If you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth checking out on YouTube. There's a throw-in and he's looking down, pulling up his socks, and he doesn't realise that the ball's coming towards him and he reacts too late. And it is one of the most...
It is a shocker. It's
absolute shocker. It really is. And it let Bremen into a game in the end where they obviously down to 10 men.
You say it let them in. They were down to 10 men. The circumstances of the goal were obviously lucky for Bremen, but they thoroughly deserved
to
the level.
Sure.
Even with 10 men, they still kept piling forward. I felt a little bit vindicated in the role that Yuya Osako was playing in there behind Max Kruse, linking up the play fantastically. Him and Davy Klaassen working together there. Obviously, I don't need to convince you, do I? don't need to convince John that Bremen are decent.
Preaching to the choir. Yeah, Stuttgart won, and it was one of those classic games where you think, here's Werder Bremen with a chance to, you know, join the top pack.
I thought Stuttgart were fortunate. Fantastic opening goal, must be said. Daniel Didavi's pass into Donis.
Donis, what a ball,
If you've not seen that ball, that's an absolute peach of a pass. But it's not all...
Sunshine and roses.
Perfect for Typhoon Korkut in Stuttgart, is it? And they were fortunate that Bremen were one down to 10 men. Two really stupid challenges from Belkovic. Within about 10 minutes of each other, weren't they? No need whatsoever.
Not smart thinking.
And they hit the post as well, didn't they, Bremen? And Stuttgart got away with that. They were quite profligate up front. Gonzalez came on in the second half and could have had a hat trick within 10 minutes. And I think failed three times when one on one with Pavlenka, who's obviously a good goalkeeper, but you've got to be putting those chances away.
Absolutely.
Gonzalo Castro did that. That was his first goal for Stuttgart.
Really good
finish.
And that changes the game. Another side that won their first game of the weekend was Schalke. Pressure off to Domenico Tedesco?
No, not yet. It wasn't a good performance, was it, either? They got away with it, but Tedesco said afterwards that he was happy that his team had a few hours just to be happy.
Sometimes you just got to win, right? They hit the bar, but sometimes you just got
to
win.
And I mean, in that part of Tedesco's career, you just had to get that first win, and you just feel that Schalke might just get that burden off their backs and start playing some football. That's what they needed to do. They've done it, and let's see what happens from now.
I was really glad to see, and quite encouraged to see, Jevon Kolopljanka involved in most
Should
of
really be starting most games.
For me, it has to be. But we've talked about this, the question as to whether Schalke's additions are really of the quality they need to match their expectations. I'm not convinced they are. However, if one player is of that sort of Champions League quality, I think it's Kolopljanka on his game. Great cross for the first goal. Good header from Schöpf. And obviously, he hit the bar. Did he hit the bar twice? Kind of play anchor, thinking.
Yeah, I think there were two posts in that game. Yeah,
He was key to it. But yeah, fair play to Schalke for digging in and getting that result out. Salif Sané marshalling the defence as well in those final stages where Mainz really put the pressure on. But yeah, that has to be the start of something now for Schalke and Tedesco. It can't go back any further.
Nuremberg beat Fortuna. I have to say, I did not see this coming. I've said all summer that I thought Fortuna did the best business and I thought Nuremberg was sure for the drop, and they come off a 7-0 hammering. Fortuna come off that defeat against Leverkusen where they were unlucky to lose. And yet, how do we explain that? I mean, that seems a big surprise to me.
I think probably an issue in terms of Dusseldorf's strength in depth, having to deal with two games in the space of 4 days, which they won't have been used to before. A lot of credit has to go to the Nuremberg coach, Michel Kölner, for clearly getting that 7-0 out of his players' system. Half-decent home form there, Nuremberg.
Frankfurt and Augsburg both won 4-1 at home on the weekend on Sunday. I mean, it's 10 goals. You don't normally see that on Sunday fixtures. Most people look at those games and think, oh, make sure I'm doing something else on Sunday.
But Frankfurt aren't known for scoring tons of goals.
No, and yet we are in a situation where there's only one side left without a win at this point in the season, and it's Hannover. And I don't think any of us would have said that. And yet they've just got spanked by a Frankfurt side who are very hot and cold, some weeks good, some weeks bad. Adi Hütte trying to stabilise things there, but I mean, as a Hannover fan, you've got to be worried now, right?
Absolutely. I mean, getting to this point without getting a win, the only Bundesliga team, it's certainly worrying. I mean, many people have tipped Hannover for relegation this season, given the signings made by other teams, and I gotta say, Horst Held needs to be worried, and I think the fans are worried, or they certainly are, and something's got to give. Whether it's going to be under Weitenreiter or not, we don't know. But something's got to change in Hannover, or else. That's how it seems right now. However, we got to give a lot of credit, to Frankfurt, because in the last couple of games, they look stable, they look good. Mm. It looks like Adi Hütte's message is trying to come through. And fair dues to him. It's looking good, and exactly when they're gonna start playing like European football, they don't play in the DFB Pokal anymore, unfortunately. But still, the period in which it matters starts now, and it's good to see Frankfurt coming back to their senses in a way and playing good football, enjoyable football, and yeah, I think their fans generally went out very happy on Sunday.
I think it may be only to be expected that Adi Hütte has needed a little bit of time and will need even more time, because this is a completely
different
Eintracht Frankfurt. Mm-hmm. We praised them so much, rightly so, last season under Kovac for how solid they were, how physically intense they were. Kovac played to his team's strengths, and that was absolutely laudable. Adi Hütte has come in with a completely different philosophy, which he brought in from Young Boys he was at, wasn't he? So it stands to reason that such a turnaround is going to take some time. So yeah, fair play to them. They're obviously a huge morale boosting win away at Marseille in the Europa League, and they've got Lazio at home this week, and that place will be bouncing, won't it, on Thursday?
Right. Absolutely. And just finally, do we need to read anything into the fact that Julian Nagelsmann lost at home to his future employers? Is that sort of a one-upmanship there for Ranić, or is that nothing really, just a standard league game situation?
Standard league game situation. I don't think Julian Nagelsmann will be bothered about that. I think it's a typical press story.
Or maybe it's because he's too distracted by the fact he's going up against one of his idols this week in Pep Guardiola. Right, that is it from us in the studio. Thanks so much for listening. We return to Hamburg, where Matt concludes his tour of the city on one of the biggest days in German football. Hamburg against St. Pauli.
Full time here in Hamburg. It's finished Hamburger SV 0, FC St. Pauli 0. And if that sounds boring, it's because, to be perfectly honest, it was. I expected a derby. I think we all expected a derby. We got that, but it was a derby in everything, or in name, but in nothing else. Around the back of the Nordtribüne now, we've bumped into Timothy again, who's shaking his head. 0-0. Are you not happy with the point?
Three words: more than disappointing.
Yeah. What did you expect, and what didn't happen?
Much more. I've expected that you're going to on the field, you're playing a derby. It's just, you've got to be emotional. You've got to be emotional. You've got to play football. It was nothing.
You said before that if you take any players from the 7th or 8th or 9th division Sunday league in Hamburg and put them on the pitch, that they would have fought more, and you were disappointed that the first night head-to-head between some of the players was in the 55th or 60th minute. Is that the most disappointing thing, or what else disappointed you?
Yeah, definitely. That was one of the most disappointing thing. Because you can lose, you can play square or whatever, you can play 0-1-1, 4-4, whatever. You can even lose 0-5 like last week against Regensburg, when the fans can see that you're playing football, that you want to win, that you're risking everything when playing in front.
But
there was nothing.
As you said before, though, it's difficult to break a team down when St. Pauli sat there with 11 men behind the ball. I think Halsfau had at one point 73% possession at one point, but it's difficult to break that down.
Yeah, but it was nothing else like in the last games. In the last 4 weeks, every team was playing 10 against 5 in the defense. You know, every team against Halsfau was playing very, very defensive. But there was at least a bit aggressive when playing forward. You know, there was just, you could see they wanted to win the game, but there was nothing like today.
Well, today you didn't have the feeling that Halsfau wanted to win that.
They were like fearing to lose, you know.
What did you think about St. Pauli's performance? Was that what you expected from them?
Not really. I hope they were... That they were playing a bit more on the win.
Yeah.
I thought they were playing a bit more on the win, but there was just the whole game was disappointing. There was no chances, no aggressive playing. It was just so disappointing from both of the teams that you thought, why have I been here? Why have I been here seeing this football game? There was nothing.
What did you think about the atmosphere off the pitch in the stands? Was that at least acceptable?
Yeah, you were saying it was acceptable. Yeah. But nothing more. Not less, but not more.
I personally expected a little bit more from both sets of supporters. I thought the St. Pauli fans in the corner were relatively quiet, given that there were 5,500 of them. And I thought the atmosphere from your side as well, actually, from the Nordtribüne was also, I have heard better, say that.
Yeah, you're saying it, yeah. You name it. It was just, we were all going to the stand hoping it was a bit more, but there was nothing. Well, it was quite okay in the first 10 minutes. But then you were seeing so much fear on the pitch, you know? So much fear on the pitch, and that is going to support us.
Do you think that was the problem? The players were too scared, under too much pressure to perform?
I think so. But it's no... Sag mal, keine Entschuldigung.
Yeah, you can't excuse it.
You can't excuse it, yeah.
At the end there, the St. Pauli fans, they seemed a little bit happier with the point. They were singing, die Nummer 1 der Stadt sind wir, we're number one in town. Are they right?
Yeah, because they won the last derby 8 years ago. So, well, I mean, let they have their fun, you know? For me, it's just, I'm so disappointed that there was not much coming from HSV. Or much too less coming from HSV. Whatever they are saying, let they have the fun, whatever. But I'm very, very disappointed from my team.
Lads, let's have a quick reaction from you over here. Timothy's disappointed with the result. What are your feelings after that 0-0?
Yeah, from my point of view, it was just a boring game. It has nothing to do with some derby feelings. It was just a boring kick between two teams which doesn't have any effort to score a goal. So
do you think both teams deserved a 0-0?
Yeah. I think St. Pauli was from the beginning just playing to have a 0-0.
Yeah.
So, but HSV or Hamburg wasn't in the mood to score a goal as well. So,
what were you thinking in the last minute when the St. Pauli striker had a shot which almost looped over Pollersbeck's head?
Yeah, this is just the problem we have generally with the system that that Mr. Titz is playing, that the trainer of Hamburg.
Well, the goalkeeper Pollersbeck spends so much time out
because the goalkeeper is always playing pretty offensive. So there's a chance if he has a missed pass, I would say, then of course he can get a loop and there is a goal. And in the last game we had some kind of this as well. So he was overlooped and we had a goal. So.
What did you think of the atmosphere from the St. Pauli fans?
I think it was quite nice. I think it was good that they behaved at the beginning with all the pyrotechnic, that they were not burning down something. But the atmosphere was better compared to the other games I was watching here.
Okay. Well, then maybe that's one little positive to take from the game. But otherwise, yeah, I think some quite disappointed Hamburg fans. I think that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Thank you anyway for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome.